This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
What was your best decision that you've made as an owner to date?
Getting Bill Belichick to come to the Patriots. I gave up a number one draft pick, coach who had only won a little over 40% of his game in 1999. It was a big risk, and I got hammered in the Boston media, but I think we did okay.
So that was Robert Kraft with Julian Edelman a little while back on one of Edelman's podcasts. He has, what, Dudes on Dudes and
Games with Names is actually awesome. That's one of my favorite podcasts.
Okay,
love that show.
Yeah, little pub for Bubs Edelman's podcast. Yeah. Well, he had Robert Kraft on, and that was Robert Kraft's answer to what his best decision was. Did you take that as a compliment to Bill Belichick, a shot at Bill Belichick when he mentions the risk portion of it? How did you interpret that comment from Robert Kraft?
So it was one of those, it was like classic Bob Kraft backhanded, like, make sure I get some credit for this compliment.
Sure.
Because when you say on the surface, hiring Bill was the best decision I made, that is a huge compliment. But then he made sure to detail, like, I stood up in the face of Boston media criticism and he won 40% of his games. Because as we've seen and we saw with the Dynasty documentary series, Kraft looks at it as Brady, Bill, Kraft. And it was a trio that was the big reason for 6 Super Bowl wins. Whereas I think a lot of other people look at it as Brady and Bill and 2 people with Kraft there. But I think he wants to be mentioned just right there with him as the 3. And look, he's the team owner. He deserves some credit for it. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I think that's really what it was. I think it was him saying, yes, it was a great decision of mine, but oh, don't forget, I had to take some criticism and I had to stand up for it.
Well, I think Bill Belichick took it as a slight, not a compliment in any way, not even a backhanded compliment.
Because yeah, that's right.
Bill Belichick went and sought out Don Van Natta at ESPN and had some quotes about Robert Kraft's comments there with Julian Edelman. Here's what Bill Belichick told Don Van Natta. Quote, as I told Robert multiple times through the years, I took a big risk by taking the New England Patriots head coaching job. I already had an opportunity to be the head coach of the New York Jets, but the ownership situation was unstable. I had been warned by multiple previous Patriots coaches, as well as other members of other NFL organizations and the media, that the New England job was going to come with many internal obstacles. I made it clear that we would have to change the way the team was managed to regain the previous attained success.
Do you know what the translation is there? Parcells told me not to do it.
Yes.
And Parcells doesn't like Kraft. Like, that's really, to me, and maybe there was a few other people, too. I'm not saying he's lying, but, like, that to me, because let's not forget, that was a few years after Parcells had his acrimonious exit from here. He and Kraft hated each other. Like, that to me, and we know how much Belichick looked up to Parcells, of course, during those, especially those Giants years. that was part of it.
Yeah, and Belichick also talked about how the Jets were a solid team after 3 years of rebuilding under Bill Parcells, which included an AFC Championship game appearance in 1999. Meanwhile, the Patriots organization had dismantled their 1996 AFC Championship team and become one of the worst in the AFC. It didn't help that they were $10 million over the cap heading into my first season as head coach in 2000. So he was really kind of trying to drive that point across that Robert had mismanaged everything post Parcells and that Bill was entering a really kind of ugly situation there. Even though he also mentioned that he could have just stayed and been the head coach of the Jets, but realistically,
he didn't want to do that.
He wanted to get out of Parcells' shadow. He wanted to go be his own
man. And it was the
man.
Ownership transition in the Jets. He wasn't sure about the new ownership. So look, you know, I'm a Bill guy, appreciate everything he did here. Leo, looked up to him for years. I think he's going overboard with this. Like, I understand. Like, was there risk on Bill's part? Yeah, the Patriots had missed the playoffs. They were $10 million over the cap. There was risk. You know, Kraft, I think, some coaches, including Parcells, looked at him derisively for some of his interference. But there was risk on Kraft's part. Like, let's not act like Kraft hired someone that was immediately a slam dunk. And also, in their first year, they went 5-11. Like, there was some risk on both sides here. And I don't think it's unfair for Kraft to acknowledge it. What I think this stems from, Shime, is did you read Belichick's book, Art of Winning?
I have not.
All right, so I read it, and so it doesn't mention Kraft at all by name, but there is one actual mention of Kraft, and near the end of the book, Belichick says difference in priorities between ownership and coaching led to a fractured relationship in Foxborough. So basically what he said in his book is that the Krafts cared more about PR than winning, and that's what went downhill in New England. Whether you agree or disagree, that's how he feels. And you had the CBS interview where Kraft was brought up and he said no. And then you have Kraft publicly saying on the Breakfast Club last year that he fired him. So I think it's all just like the next step in all that.
I just, from my perspective, it's all just way too petty. Like
they legitimately don't like each other.
It feels like two high school girls that are fighting. Like just like constantly like scratching and clawing at each other. And it's just, it's incessant, and it's beneath both of them. Like, one of them is the greatest football coach in the history of the sport, having won 6 Super Bowls. The other is an owner of arguably the most prestigious franchise in the sport.
And the most successful in the last 25 years.
Without question. It's not even close. And so, like, you don't need to be doing this. I understand that the ending was poor, but you don't need to constantly be finding new ways to take shots at each other. Whether it's making the Dynasty documentary and clearly having a negative Bill slant, or taking shots at Robert for mishandling the Patriots post 1996 AFC Championship game and putting yourself or putting them in a tenuous situation that you were then entering. Like, you don't need to take shots at each other. Like, why can't we, just as fans, allow this to just kind of like, we lived the greatest dynasty sports has ever seen. Why can't you just bask in that? It's one of the things I think Tom Brady has done very well for himself post-playing career. He has stayed relatively out of all of this drama and just allows the accomplishments to speak for themselves. Because you make yourselves look like fools when you're doing nothing but bickering and fighting after this dynasty. And instead of trying to take credit for all of it, each of you, at every single time, it's just making everybody think Tom Brady was the most to credit for everything.
And I think, though, Brady has that trump card of he won a Super Bowl somewhere else. Like, if the Patriots had won a Super Bowl after Brady, we would not see any of this. Like, that's why. Because Kraft's still mad at Bill for saying he wanted Brady gone, and it didn't work out. Like, I think, honestly, that's the root cause of a lot of this, right? Because Brady went somewhere else and won. And I completely understand why Bill doesn't like Kraft. Sure. And I can completely understand why Kraft is fed up and doesn't like Bill. I get it. But this statement to me was totally unnecessary.
It's like
Kraft wasn't wrong. Like, it was a risky hire. And Bill, look, there was risk involved in his part. But, like, do we need a statement to Don Van Natta about that?
No.
Again, love the guy. Appreciate everything he did. But I don't think that's necessary.
It's beneath them. Like, this is a 22-year relationship that you then got a divorce out of this marriage, and yet even still, when you're separated and you're not involved with each other at all anymore, you're still constantly taking shots, whether it's through the kids or through friends, and it feels like it's never going to stop.
Because you know what's going to happen. whatever UNC does this year is going to be the next shot. So if UNC sucks,
Kraft is going to take
somehow,
a shot towards Bill.
Somehow he's going to be like, see, he was past his prime.
And if UNC's in the college football playoff,
Bill or
Tannenbaum or one of his guys is going to be taking a shot towards Kraft.
He's going to see the program
works. Yeah, you kicked him out of the New England. Right. What are you doing, you fool?
You wanted Mac Jones, and he said no, right? Like that. Like that's – it's coming. So just prepare yourselves, Patriots fans. There is at least one more round of this coming later this year.
It's just so frustrating because I feel like being a fan of a team who's not quite good anymore, at least for right now – it's like I just want to be able to look back at that time and like watch that video of Tom Brady coming back in the Atlanta Super Bowl and just really kind of appreciate those moments. And then when you see stuff like this from guys who are a part of it, major factors in it, just fighting like school kids, it's so silly. It's petty. It's beneath them. And it's just infuriating. I can't. Yeah, and it's just so frustrating.
And you do radio every day, so you see this a lot. Like, this whole situation, I think, has warped a lot of people into all of a sudden not liking someone that was responsible.
Yeah.
And there's people out there that aren't as happy about Brady as they used to be. There's people out there that don't like Bill anymore. There's people out there that don't like Kraft anymore. All three of them, and look, it was mostly Brady and Bill, but all three of them helped create the best dynasty in the history of the NFL.
I get it every day on my show because the guy who normally sits in this seat is very much pro Belichick, and the guy who normally sits next to me in that studio is very anti Belichick. And so it's like, I'm like, all right, guys, I get it. Like, it's just Belichick made a lot of mistakes. He kind of ruined the team before he left in that he put a defensive coordinator, an offensive coordinator. They drafted poorly.
17-22.
Like, he won four games in his final season. He kind of ruined what they were, and we spiraled since then a little bit, but hopefully we're back on track. But like, he was still the greatest coach in the history of football. Like, he still won six Super Bowls, and his defenses were major factors in that. Tom Brady was also a massive factor in that, of course.
He also made...
But everybody gets a little bit of credit.
If you want to talk about a risk, the biggest risk in professional football probably in the last 30, maybe 40 years, is he chose to stick with Brady in 2001 when Bledsoe was healthy.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to talk about a risk...
Bledsoe had a $100 million contract.
Exactly. So if you want to talk about a risk, that's the biggest risk, at least in the last 30 years, in the NFL, and he took it. So,
and I think Brady has acknowledged that, and I think that's the difference here, right, is Brady acknowledges that Bill gave him the opportunity, and Tom simply seized it and held on to it and then turned into the greatest quarterback of all time, whereas a guy like Bill has zero interest in accepting that Robert hired him and gave him a chance to become what he became. And that's why these two just continue to butt heads, because Bill's like, no, I did you a favor by coming over here and saving your franchise. And whereas Kraft thinks that he did him a favor by hiring him.
And I think the only way this is going to end, to be completely honest, is they both have to win something again. Because you mentioned, like, you're right, Brady has largely stayed out of it, but he has that trump card. He won a Super Bowl. So Bill needs to do well at UNC, and the Patriots have to be good once again, and then it'll start to fade away, because then they'll feel validated, right? Brady feels validated because he won six here, went to a crappy franchise, and won there.
Perennially one of the worst, like, the literally most losing franchises in NFL history.
Whereas even in 1996, like, Kraft was the owner, but Belichick was on that coaching staff. And so it's like they have never won apart. And Bill maybe has those, like, I give Bill credit for those Super Bowl rings with the Giants as DC. Like, that's legit. But he hasn't won as a head coach somewhere.
No.
Kraft hasn't won as an owner. So that's the only way I think this is going to end. And Belichick is not, Parcells is going into the Patriots Hall of Fame this year. Bill's not going anytime
soon. He's also not going to be at the Tom Brady statue either.
No way.
So you mentioned Parcells going into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Wasn't the whole point of putting him in to do it when they were both still alive? So why is Kraft now recreating the same drama with Parcells with Belichick, where, who knows, maybe in 10 years one of them's not here and we're looking back going, man,
I think that's what's
nice going to
happen, Zach. Like, yeah. I don't think Belichick's going to get into that until, and not to be morbid, but until Kraft is no longer in charge of the team, one way or the other. I really, unless something drastic changes, I think that's the way we're going to see it. And it even felt like, I don't know, were you at Brady night last June?
I was not.
All right,
no.
So I was there, and the ovation Brady got was the biggest, obviously.
Yeah.
But the second biggest ovation was when Bill came on that stage. And I wonder if a little of that stuck with Kraft, too. And I would even say the third biggest ovation was for Randy Moss.
Yes.
Actually, in his moment. So I
that
wonder,
probably stuck in Kraft's craw. And he
I think it did a little
it.
Bit. Because when Kraft got up to go make his final speech, and it was a nice speech, that you could tell the applause was less than those others. Like, yeah. It wasn't muted, it wasn't nothing, but you could, like, Bill got a 2-minute standing ovation. Brady got multiple minutes standing ovation. Moss got a big standing. It wasn't quite that pop.
No, and I think a lot of that, too, is because he still owns the team, and the team's not that good right now. Like, if the team was, like, as you pointed out, if the team had won a Super Bowl post Belichick and Brady, they would still give a giant pop to Kraft, because Kraft would be getting more credit for continuing the success post two of the greatest to have ever graced the sport. Whereas, because it's been so bad, what have you shown us that you have any impact on it?
And we've even seen, like, remember when, I think it was his second to last year here, Belichick made a comment like, oh, we were 29th in cash spending the last 10 years. Like, okay, well, part of that is you didn't have any first-round picks worth re-signing.
True.
Or second-round picks worth re-signing. Like, that's also why you spent less money. And part of it is, yeah, the owner wanted to build a lighthouse. And
because you won't overpay for free agents.
Yeah. But like, that goes both ways.
Yep.
Like, part of that is, like, you didn't give a second contract to Dominique Easley because he wasn't worth it. Or Sony Michel because he wasn't worth it.
Or Isaiah Wynn.
Right. Or Malcolm Brown. Like, those guys weren't worth second. Joanne Williams wasn't worth the second contract. So, that, to me, like, that goes, but similar to what we're talking about, he wants to blame Robert for not spending. Robert wants to blame him just for not players not being good enough. And it's like it goes both ways.
617-779-7937. Lions and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. But right now, Zach is going to get you caught up with what is trending.
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox kicked off the unofficial second half yesterday with a 4-1 loss to the Cubs in Wrigley, snapping their 10-game winning streak. Lucas Giolito got the start. He went 5 1/3, allowing 4 runs on 5 hits while striking out 6. The Sox lone source of offense, an RBI double off the bat of Roman Anthony in the third. Here's what Red Sox manager Alex Cora had to say after the loss.
I think we had chances, and then we made that base running mistake. You know, first and second, no outs. Alex hit the ball hard, and Abraham, you know, had the bad read, you know, and we got double up. You know, we put pressure on them, not enough. First inning, 2 walks. You know, we can talk about the swing, the homer, but the 2 walks before put us in a bad spot.
They'll look to bounce back tonight when Brian Baio takes the mound opposite Shota Imanaga for the Cubs. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Joe Weil gets you started on the MassMutual pregame show at 6:15. Then Will Fleming and Mike Monaco will have the call of the game. First pitch from the friendly confines at 7:15. Patriots have now signed their entire 2025 draft class after the team and second-round pick running back Travion Henderson agreed to a fully guaranteed contract. Henderson, along with the rest of the Patriots rookies, report for training camp today, while the rest of the roster reports on Tuesday. Practices that are open to the public begin on Wednesday. The third round of the Open Championship is underway in Northern Ireland. Scottie Scheffler and Matt Fitzpatrick are tied for the lead at 10 under. They are both through 3 in their round 3 play. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Shime and Lions coming up after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
When MLB talent takes the field, reactions get loud.
Aaron Judge with a blast!
Oh my God!
Whole scheme.
Struck him out with 102!
Laser beam!
Ohtani! Inevitable!
Walk off, baby! This is the best!
Witness baseball greatness for yourself at the ballpark. Baseball is something else.
Yes!
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Shime and Lions here on a Saturday on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Talked a lot of Red Sox early on, talked a lot of football, talked about bickering old men. Now time to get back into actual football a little bit here because I'm done yelling about bickering old men. I feel like I'm bickering about bickering old men. I don't want to do that. I want to be happier with
my life.
It's
too nice a day for that.
You're damn right, John Lyons. You're darn right about that. And so instead, let's get into three position groups we feel we are very confident or feel good about on the New England Patriots heading into training camp and into the preseason here, and three that maybe we don't feel so great about. And so, Lyons, I'll start with you. What is one position group you feel good about heading into Patriots training camp?
So, cornerback, right? I think Christian Gonzalez is their best overall player. I think Carlton Davis is an ideal number two corner over there. Detroit played the most man coverage in the NFL. I think he's a good cover corner as well. 6'1", 208, good length, pretty good tackler. I know he had an injury last year, but it was a broken jaw, and not to minimize a broken jaw, but it's not like it was a hip injury that affects his movement or a shoulder injury that affects his tackling. So I really, really like him there. I think Alex Austin, I like him as a developmental piece. I mean, he probably in the last year or so of that development, but I like him there. And then Marcus Jones, kind of see what we get there at slot corner. I think there's potential there. I got to see a little bit more of it, but mainly because of those top two guys, corners is the position I feel the best about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is the best position group on the team. You saw it even scouts and executives across the league agree, like Christian Gonzalez was the one player you had in the top 10 at any position. He's a what feels like a rising star at corner. You saw what Sauce Gardner got paid this week by the Jets. Christian Gonzalez is very much going to be due for a contract like that in the next 2 years. And I think the Patriots should and hopefully will pay that because he has been awesome. He was the best corner coming out of that draft. I still couldn't believe.
I can't believe he fell that far.
I still cannot believe Emmanuel Forbes got drafted over Christian Gonzalez.
Yeah,
I still can't believe that.
Witherspoon, I could understand.
Yeah.
But I still disagreed.
Agreed.
But yeah, Forbes, I was shocked when Forbes went off the board.
Flat Stanley, he weighed like 150 pounds. He's not even on the Commanders anymore.
It's like Washington just fell in love with all those pick sixes at Mississippi State.
Yeah, did you watch the tape at all? Yeah. Like, dude, the guy
Gonzo
is paper thin.
Yeah, I think Gonzo's going to go down as the best corner in that draft, and I think they really lucked out getting him there.
Yeah, and the fact you got him at 17 was kind of, it feels like a steal in retrospect, and he's definitely the best player. So the first, outside of the cornerbacks, the first position group I would say I feel the best about, I would actually say running back. You know I'm a huge Travion Henderson guy.
Yep.
I love that. But I think being able to pair him with Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson gives you a lot of versatility. It allows for the explosiveness of Travion Henderson to kind of be a weapon in both the pass game and in the run game. Ramondre has been here. He's had a lot of ups and downs. There's been a lot of question marks with him. I think he's overpaid. That's a whole different conversation. But like, I think he's a relatively reliable back, and he will allow for some different types of runs in between the tackles that Travion Henderson and Antonio Gibson don't give you. And then Gibson, I think, is a great change of pace. Like, he's very different from the other two. He's not quite as fast as Henderson, but he's got a little bit more pop than Ramondre Stevenson, better in the pass game. I think all three of these running backs provide receiving opportunities, which is a huge benefit to Drake May and what Josh McDaniels wants to do with this offense. So I think, to me, the running back group is one that I feel very good about heading into training camp.
And how they manage them is an interesting storyline too, because I think one issue Stevenson has had is the last 2 years he's gotten overused, and you see him break down. He got hurt towards the end of last year, 2022. Remember, he had 69 catches in addition to all those carries. He was worn out by the end of the year. But Henderson's a rookie. Gibson, I think, is a nice kind of piece in a running back room as the third guy. So I want to see how they manage those guys. And the big question to me is Stevenson's fumbling too, because if he's fumbling the ball a lot, you're going to see Henderson and Gibson playing a lot more. So that's what it comes down to for me. But I think that group has good potential.
And I think the unique thing, too, is a lot of times you'd see rookie running backs not out there on third downs. I don't think that'll be the case with Henderson just because of how good of a pass blocker he is. And if you've been on Twitter at all and you follow any of the scouts, they have tweeted videos of him pass blocking at Ohio State, and it's just fun to watch.
Oh, I love to watch. Yeah, he's great at that.
He is a heat-seeking missile at times. He wants to hit the pass rushers. He is not going to let a free rusher come in. And so as long as he picks up on the gaps that Josh McDaniels wants him to cover, the players he wants him to take care of, Henderson's going to be just fine, and he'll be out there on impact downs.
Yeah, and I think if you look back to the way they've usually used running backs, like, Vereen sat early on. James White sat early on. Stevenson was kind of in and out of the lineup in 21. But I think Henderson, because of his skill set, I think they'll initially work him in kind of slowly in September. But I wouldn't be surprised if by December, he's almost splitting snaps equally with Stevenson because of how dynamic he can be. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to get 20 carries a game.
No.
But can he get 10 to 15 touches a
game?
That's
what I want.
Similar amount of snaps to Stevenson because you include the pass blocking. Because the pass blocking thing, I know a lot of people don't care about it, but that's what allows him to be on the field for all three downs. And that, to me, is a big deal.
I think in the second half of the season, if Henderson's getting 10 carries and like five targets a game, that's where you want to live. Like, that is when he'll be at his best early on in his career, just because that allows for certain packages and certain opportunities for him to be explosive and to catch that team off guard. What's another group you feel good about?
Defensive line. And when I say defensive line, I know some people are like, oh, it's tackles, edges. Or, you know, some people put them linebackers or whatever. I'm looking at the front four. Like, I think Christian Barmore, the health is a question, but that's a blue chip player if he's back and healthy. Milton Williams, the snap count is a question, but I think that's a good player. And the guy that I'm actually most excited about there, I think Keon White's going to have a really good year this year.
I hope so, man.
I think 6'5", 285, moves well. He's actually has a real coach in his own words.
Yes, he does.
This year, what a shot. What a shot that was.
That was not veiled.
And it was like
not a backhanded slap.
But it
was
just like
direct.
This kind of like throwaway comment. Like, yeah, I have a real coach this year. Like, whatever. Like, but I think what the Patriots drafted him for a couple years ago, I think you're going to see this year. I think he's going to have a really good year. I think Jennings is good setting the edge. So I am a little concerned about the depth of tackle behind Barmore and Milt Williams. Like, Jeremiah Farms, I think, can be okay. Joshua Farmer has some potential, but he needs to develop. Same thing with Braden Swinson on the edge. But I think that front four, I feel pretty good about.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think the front four is really good. You're right. The depth is a question for sure beyond that front four. But that front four is a great starting four. And I think hopefully, as you pointed out with Keon White, the original goal I felt like was to have somebody opposite Matthew Judon, right? So you can attack the pass rush from both sides and be really aggressive in that way. And then without Judon there, Keon White, I felt like, didn't get exposed, but was very neutered last year by offensive lines. Whereas this year, having a guy like Harold Landry opposite him, having Barmore back in the center of that defensive line, having Milton Williams out there, I think will really benefit him.
And even Kalevon Chason, who struggled.
Right. I always forget that they signed
him. He struggled with the Jaguars, but then last year, six sacks, got a lot better. Like, maybe that, I think that guy could be a piece that, if he gets you five or six sacks in key spots this year, like, I think that would be a nice addition, too.
That's a great point. The other group, and this is almost like a subset group, but I'm going to go with the tight ends. I think I'm very confident in the tight ends. Hunter Henry has been arguably the most reliable player outside of Christian Gonzalez on this team. So the most reliable offensive player you've had over the last, 3 years now?
Yep.
He is locked in almost for sure to be at 600 yards and around five touchdowns, a little more in some cases if you look back at 2021. But like, that is, he is Mr. Reliable when it comes to this offense. He is relatively sure-handed. Last year, you saw that ball that kind of popped out of his hands and ended up being an interception. You hate to see that, but that's going to happen every once in a while. For the most part, really sure-handed. And then Austin Hooper, I think, is a nice compliment to that. He doesn't get a ton of targets, doesn't make a ton of catches, but when he does, they're relatively impactful, and I think he's helpful on the offense. So I like the tight end group.
That's actually one of mine that I'm concerned about going into camp, because I agree with you, everything you said about Hunter Henry. I think he's a borderline, you know, top 10 tight end in the league, that 8 to 12 range, whatever you want to put him. He had 9 touchdowns with Josh a few years ago as OC.
And should be better in the red zone this year.
And I agree, totally, right? He does turn 31 in December, which, again, that's not old, but it's getting up there. My concern about the tight end group is not Henry. It's the depth beyond that, because I think Hooper, at this point in his career, he's more of a journeyman guy, and his advantage last year is he came from Cleveland. He knew the Van Pelt offense. He's learning a new offense this year. Jaheim Bell had one catch last year and was not really used much at all. You have some undrafted free agents beyond that. So I agree with you that Henry is a really good player. I just don't see good depth behind that. And that, if Henry gets hurt, or even if they want to use two tight ends, whatever, like, that's my worry there. Is I don't know who's going to emerge. And maybe it's G. Scott Jr. I don't know, but I don't know who's going to emerge as that second real tight end.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I like Hooper for the role that he has in the role that's necessary in this offense. Like, I don't expect them to need that second tight end quite as much. Yeah, maybe in the run blocking, you're going to run a lot of two tight end sets. I just don't think that they are going to focus a ton, especially in the passing game, running a lot of two tight end sets, just because their receivers.
I think you could see a lot of 21 personnel with Henderson and Stevenson on the field together with Henry
definitely.
At tight end.
You should.
Like, that might be their solution, because also, like, if you go 11 personnel, like, all right, Steph Diggs will be out there, and I assume Mac Hollins at X
and Pop Douglas.
And Pop Douglas. And then Kyle Williams will be the fourth guy. And that's okay, but I think you can also get advantages with having Henderson and Stevenson out there together.
Yeah, and so I guess that's why I'm not quite as concerned about that second tight end spot and the depth there, because I think you can find guys that are run-blocking tight ends all over the place, and, like, it's just...
And I also think this is a larger point about where the Patriots are at, because I think what separates the really great teams from the average to below average teams is depth.
Yeah.
And obviously, you got to have a great quarterback, duh. But beyond that, a lot, like, you look at how deep the Eagles are, how deep the Lions are, how deep the Chiefs are. Like, they can sustain injuries. Like, if Hunter Henry gets hurt, they are in trouble at tight end. If Robert Spillane gets hurt, they're in trouble at linebacker. Like, they have these top guys that are pretty good, don't get me wrong. But, like, or if Steph Diggs can't work his way back from injury, like, then you have some real concerns there. So I think it's just a larger point about where the Patriots are at. They're starting to get some of these better players, these good starters, but the depth is something that might still be a year away.
And that's the result of having so many bad drafts in 100%. A row, right? Now that you're starting to hopefully get a couple better draft classes in the building, and hopefully some of those guys will continue to
they
get
better. They have two guys left from the 2022 draft. One's Cole Strange, the other's Marcus Jones.
And we don't even know Cole Strange
in
is all
2021,
that good.
You have two guys left from that draft. And Barmore's legit, and the other Stevenson. But still, that's four total guys from two drafts, and only two of them are... One of them's good, one of them's decent, the other two you're not sure about.
Yeah, which is crazy. Maybe. So you mentioned that you have some questions about the tight end group. One of the groups I have a lot of questions about is actually the safety group, because...
Me too.
I just feel like Kyle Duggar was absolutely exposed in pass coverage last year. It was not pretty. I like Jabril Peppers. I don't love Jabril Peppers. I think he offers some things for the defense, especially when he's playing up in the box a little bit. I like the way he plays against tight ends, or at least most tight ends. But, like, the big question for me is I feel like they still lack that center fielder, that Devin McCourty-esque player that can sit back and really kind of not allow for the big explosive plays to get by him. I think that's what, as we talked about a little bit earlier, one of the things that made some of those Bill Belichick defenses so great was that Devin McCourty allowed you to do so many things in front of him, and that he was able to recover and never allow receivers to really beat you deep and not get those 50-yard DK Metcalf touchdowns because there wasn't this breakdown in communication. And now you drafted Craig Woodson. Could he become that? I don't know. I think that's possible, but it's such a question mark and such a big thing to ask of a fourth-round rookie that, to me, the safety group is in such a big question mark.
Craig Woodson, to me, is one of those interesting players on the team because if you look at him at Cal last year, he had 328 snaps at free safety. But then he also had 255 snaps at box safety and over 100 snaps at slot corner.
But so he's not big enough to be like an NFL box safety,
right?
Which is why that, so, like, I don't know exactly how they want to use him.
I think he's going to end up either being a slot corner or free safety. And I think, and it's weird because I know those are two totally different positions.
Sure.
But his 40-yard dash was fifth among safeties. You watch him on film. He's a really good athlete.
He's got great closing speed.
I think, and I talked about this last night on the Arcan show, ironically, I think the most intriguing and maybe the fiercest position battle we're going to see is not a true position battle. It's going to be between Craig Woodson and Marcus Jones. And whichever one's better, if Jones is better, they're going to use a lot of three cornerbacks, right, with him in the slot. If Woodson's better, they're going to use a lot of three safeties with Duggar down in the box and Woodson over the top. Like, I think that, to me, philosophically and defensively, that might be the fiercest position battle in the entire training.
But I think the best thing for the Patriots, though, if you talk about that, like, I think it would be great if Marcus Jones shows you that he is ready to be that slot corner. He's ready for that role. He's going to stay healthy for the season. And then Craig Woodson also shows his ability to play safety, because I think having them at those positions is best case for the Patriots. If Craig Woodson can be a good free safety and you can have Marcus Jones playing slot corner regularly and effectively, that is when this defense will probably be at its best.
Sure. And then, but then at that point, if you want both of them on the field together, you're probably taking Duggar off the field,
which
right?
is because
Gonzo and Duggar.
I think it's okay though, because then that becomes a trade asset that you have. Like, that's somebody that you can. That's a contract you can kind of separate yourself from. I don't know that in retrospect it looks as good as it did.
And Jalen Hawkins played a bunch of free safety last year. I don't know if he's a. I mean, I don't think he sucks.
Del Pettis.
Yeah, I think he's like. I think those guys are solid. But like Marte Mapu too is a weird one in that I thought he was the only defensive player last year that actually got better as the season went on. Like, I mean, so many of those guys regressed, but even him, there's you don't fully know what you have there.
Well, and right on, I believe on the roster, they've officially changed his designation from safety linebacker to linebacker.
Right. So is he going to be a guy that they want to maybe take over for Jelani Tavai next to Spillane? Like, I don't know, but is he big enough for that? Like, there's a lot of questions around him, but the safety one is a go-to, because Duggar, to me, it feels like not only did he have a down year last year, it just kind of feels like he's plateaued, and it's kind of what he is. And Peppers,
well, that's what happens when you take him from what 1AA or Division II, whatever it was.
I think he's a pretty good player, but I think maybe there was hopes he was going to be a great player because of his athletic skills. He's pretty good at times, and last year he wasn't. And Peppers turns 30 in October. Both of those guys have outs in their contracts after this year. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if later in the year, much like Henderson on offense, we sit here and we're saying, "Wow, Craig Woodson's playing a lot more than I thought he would." Like, it wouldn't surprise, or maybe it's Jalen Hawkins, but we're going to sit here and be like, "Wow, you know, that guy's playing a lot more than we thought he was."
So we've hit on almost every position group. Is there another position group in particular you wanted to hit on that you're not very confident in?
One that concerns me, and it's very similar to tight end, is linebacker, because I think Spillane is a good player. He's a terrific run defender. He comes downhill all the time. He had, whatever it was, 130 tackles, whatever it was last year. But Tavai got injured, and I think he's kind of an inconsistent player.
He's also not that good,
Ellis is a special teamer. Mapu, as we just mentioned, there's a lot of questions. So very similar to tight end, I like the top guy, but then I look at what you have beyond that, and there's just not a lot of depth that I'm inspired by. I mean,
does
again,
Jack Gibbons get any run this year, having been a Vrabel guy?
It's like, again, but that's what we're talking about, because like, Spillane does a lot of the things you like. Two interceptions last year, two sacks, great against the run. It's just, I don't know if I look at that group and I have a lot of confidence in the other guys there.
Yeah, there's no depth. There's none. It's Spillane, and then that's kind of it.
Yeah. Like if Tavai is your third or fourth linebacker, you have a good defense. If he's your second linebacker, I have some concerns.
I agree with you. And so it's going to be, I think that's one of the biggest things for this defense, is that middle of the defense. I think like on the corners and up at the front four, they're really good. But then the safeties and linebackers are such a concern for me. Maybe it results in like a way that you can get more out of Duggar. Maybe Duggar slides in and becomes like a linebacker.
Yeah, like they
theoretically,
did with,
and you play,
was it Adrian Phillips they did that with?
Yeah,
a few
and
years
so you're
ago,
playing
yeah.
a lot of Spillane and Duggar next to each other with Peppers and Woodson more as your safeties. Maybe you see more of that. It's you're gonna have to get creative with the middle of your defense there in order to make yourselves like a legitimate top 10 defense.
Yeah, and I think having the two good corners helps you a lot. Having good two pass rushing defensive tackles helps you a lot. But I still sit here and say, all right, they're definitely going to be better against the pass this year. Are they going to be a lot better against the run? Like, I think Barmore is going to help you be better against the run. Milton Williams will help you be better. And Spillane will help you be better. But I do have questions about who's next to Spillane, the snap counts for Milton Williams. Like, that's another piece of this, too.
617-779-7937. Scheim and Lyons here talking Pats. If you got any thoughts on a position group you're more confident in, less confident in than others, feel free to weigh in. We'll continue with a little bit more Patriots, maybe talk a little bit more Bill Belichick, because there's been some news about what he's up to down at UNC and the documentary series that he may be producing. So we'll get to that coming up next year on Scheim and Lyons.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Shime and Lions here on a beautiful Saturday on Boston Sports Original WEEI. A lot of football this hour, a little bit of Belichick and Kraft. Now a little bit more Belichick, because a report came out just yesterday that Bill Belichick will be having a UNC-centered docuseries coming out on Hulu soon, Lions. So there was the whole drama earlier this year about how Hard Knocks was thinking about heading down to Chapel Hill and doing Hard Knocks at UNC. That ended up falling apart, didn't end up going through, and instead now it seems as though Hulu will be having a docuseries about Bill and UNC. How do we feel about that, or your reaction to the Hulu docuseries?
Well, I was at one of their spring practices in April, so I'm just kind of hoping I can be in the background.
Nice!
That's kind of my
goal. A cameo
goal.
Appearance by
I
John
Lyons.
I didn't
see any TV cameras, though, at the practice, so maybe I didn't.
Maybe they were hidden up in the stands somewhere.
Look, as a football nerd, I'm interested in it, right? How is Bill at the college level? How does he prepare teams? How does he recruit? How does he build it? But I think we both know the biggest parts of this docuseries or whatever are going to be his interactions with Jordan and his thoughts on Kraft. Don't be surprised if that's where you get another little shot at Kraft too. But that's what it's going to be. So, like, and we've even seen in Hard Knocks, like, Hard Knocks is great for the football stuff, but sometimes it's those team meetings or those conversations that end up kind of sticking with people the most and that people remember the most. So I'm hopeful for it. I really wish it was just Hard Knocks, because I know they would do a good job, but I mean, I'm looking forward to watching it more for the football nerd part of me.
I'm also just curious to see what Bill's interactions are like with college players compared to NFL players, kind of what his attitude is like, how much of a hard ass he is.
Do you want the scholarship? Like, we can give you the scholarship, but we don't have to give you the scholarship.
Well, because he even said,
you want an NIL deal? Fine.
Like, I think he was on, like, Ryan Clark's podcast.
We can't pay $2 million in NIL. We're not freaking Ohio State. We can't do that. Like, I can't wait for it. Like, I feel like that's going to happen at some point.
Great minds think alike.
Well,
there you go.
He even talked on, like, Ryan Clark's podcast about why Hard Knocks fell through and how, like, this isn't training camp. Like, in an NFL training camp, guys don't get cut. It's not like that. It's, you know, all the guys you're bringing on the team are guys that you have gone out and recruited and want on your team. And so it's a little bit different. It's a different environment. And so I'm really kind of curious how this will play in the college football environment. And you've seen a lot of, you know, sports documentaries really kind of pop off in recent years. You talk about The Drive to Survive F1, Full Swing, Quarterback on Netflix, even the positional groups. I think they have, like, Receiver and stuff. And then Hard Knocks, of course. And so I'm really curious kind of the approach they take and how Bill looks dealing with college students instead of, you know, NFL players.
Yeah, and I think it'd be cool to see if there's any connection still to the NFL. Like, does he still talk to NFL people to kind of get a sense of, does he want to go
back? Is Nick Saban going to make an appearance?
Does he want to go back there? Right. So, and that was another one, actually. Belichick and Saban. That was a good sports documentary a few years ago. But that to me, that's what I'm interested in. How does he work with the college kids? How does he recruit kids? How is he getting ready for the ACC? It's just because it's something that he coached in the NFL for 40 years, greatest football coach of all time. He's never coached in college before, so it's new. So that to me, I'm really excited to kind of see how that goes. But like I said, as we know, the biggest storylines are going to come from, you know, when the camera's on the beach with him and Jordan and Jupiter.
Doing,
you know,
the airplane.
Yeah.
Now, how successful do you think he'll be in season one? Do you think they'll be a good football team?
Yeah, when I was down there watching, and obviously since then, that was April, so they've had a few guys added in the transfer portal. They lost a couple guys as well, including that good defensive end whose name escapes me. But they, when I saw down there, and just knowing how good a coach Bill is from my time as a Patriots fan, but just what I saw down there, they're definitely going to be better than they were a year ago. Like last year, they were 6-7, lost the Fenway Bowl. They weren't that good.
And they got smacked by UConn, right?
I could maybe see them sneaking up on the ACC, kind of like SMU last year, where they made the ACC championship game, lost to Clemson, and were that kind of final team in the college football playoff. Like, I think that's their ceiling. I think it's going to be somewhat, it's going to be approaching that, but it's just the ACC. I mean, Clemson could win a national championship. Syracuse is pretty good. BC will be pretty good. I think Miami's going to be a great team. So, I mean, I think if they're the fourth or fifth team in the ACC in year one, a lot of people around here won't look at that as a success, but I do think that would be kind of a success. So I think they're going to be in the neighborhood of, like, the third-ish best team in the ACC.
Yeah, and it...
Maybe fourth.
Quick look at their schedule. They're only real... quote-unquote tough games would probably be Clemson and Syracuse. Like, those are their two toughest games. And Clemson you get in, like, week five.
And that's the thing now, because the ACC is so freaking big that they don't have to play BC.
You're getting teams like Richmond and Charlotte and Cal and
that's the thing. So, like, I could see them going 9-3, but if one loss is to Clemson and another is to Syracuse, then you're, what, the third-best team in the ACC. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
That's how it could work out. So I wouldn't, like, to me, their ceiling is SMU from a year ago.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. I expect them to be better. Like, you have to be much better than they were last year. Two wins is better. Three wins is ideal, right? If Bill wins 9 games in his first year at UNC, I think that's a success, and he's working in the right direction. And then you just go from there. And then hopefully
he stays.
Yeah, you see if he stays, and if he does, you're hopefully making the college football playoff the second year you're there. But 617-779-7937, Scheim and Lions here on a Saturday on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Now, Lions, I think we should mix in a little bit of basketball. There was some news this week. A certain free agent signed with a team that wasn't the Boston Celtics. Let's get into that next here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.